Okay, we're back together. I don't know about you guys. I slept just so soundly last night. Guy had to wake me up knocking on the door at 9:15. And I think that's a good sign. And I'm getting a lot of feedback that each one of you has been so happy that the others that are here are here. It's just been... And that's... I'll tell you why I put on the letter... Don't bring a large group. Just bring one or be by yourself. We have a tendency to bring our entire home group. And then we hang around with our home group and go back. And I know it's tempting, but I'd like to keep it this way. That just come, you know, one or two and then meet all the other people who end up being wanting to come by themselves or with just one other. And that's the new bonding. That's the new thing. And it's almost just chosen by random. I mean, this thing was spread around by word of mouth. Somebody would email somebody else, and a lot of people heard at the last second, oh, you think I could come down to the... And that's who was supposed to be here. It's this group right here. That's who was supposed to be here. And somebody who had... got sick at the last second, they're supposed to be in another group. And I have that feeling, and I just walk around going, God, I'm glad this group is here. And you're all from all over the place. And so that was just one thought. Then the other thing, I left a couple things out of forgiveness. So before I get on to the today, and I don't know how I forgot this, but I almost cried when I read the story of the murder in the Amish community. Amish, is that how you pronounce it? In the Amish community. It brought tears to my eyes. I didn't know that that kind of a world existed anywhere, where the first thought was forgiveness and to go and comfort the family of the son who killed. And I was thinking of the prayer of St. Francis. It's better to understand than to be understood. It's better to forgive. Everything that that prayer stands for took place in that thing. It was just where there's error, I bring truth. Where there's wrong, I bring a sense of forgiveness. I mean, just right down. And I'm sure in that family with their son that did that, there was a great darkness that settled in on them, a great gloom. And here comes the rest of the families to bring light. And there was a lot of sadness, and they came in and brought joy. You're forgiven. It's all right. And we understand. Instead of, we're going to get you, and you're going to pay for what was done. I mean, the traditional things. And I just cried when I read that, because I saw that as someone who had awakened. It's an awakened perspective on what happened. An enlightened perspective. And then in the same Tampa Tribune issue that had that story, there was an editorial from the Los Angeles Times on the same incident. And their take was, those people ought to wise up and put locks on their schools. That was the message whoever wrote that editorial, that was their perspective, that, geez, quite two different views. And I'm capable of both. And we all are. We're capable of seeing it. That was a beautiful example. The other thing about forgiveness, this is hard to explain, but I'll do the best that I can. God forgives us and loves us exactly the same when we're sinning as when we're not. Exactly the same. It's impossible to interrupt His flow of love. We're already forgiven while we're robbing the bank. We're already forgiven. And so, At least the way I see it, we should be, if we want to be like God, if we want to be love, we should be forgiving ourselves as we are sinning. And that sounds like we're condoning it. No, we're not doing that. It's just that we're powerless over a lot of things. That's where we are today. I'm thinking these thoughts. I'm having my fifth piece of cake. I'm looking at that girl across the meeting whose legs are spread. I'm looking over here. And what do? I condemn myself and cut myself off from God. And now I'm experiencing the pain of being cut off. So what am I going to do to relieve the pain? How about one more piece of cake? How about whatever it is? How about two more half hours of porn? How about venting anger? How about this? How about that? So it is in the forgiveness as whatever is happening, I'm forgiving myself for, that I maintain the contact with my higher power. And the act itself does not put me in any pain. Therefore, there's no need to repeat it. See, the need for a lot of the things that human beings do comes from being separated from God and trying to find a way to relieve the pain of separation. And drinking was one of them, eating is one of them, or not eating on the other side of the thing. I'm going to forgive myself for not eating today instead of condemning myself so that the next day I got to do it again in order to feel better. And the more I thought about that, I said, my God, what a way to have things removed naturally, by removing the need to do them, because we're already connected. So I saw that forgiveness as we got to take it further, as far as ourselves are concerned, and stop giving ourselves a hard time about anything. Just go, I love you anyway, even though you're this way. I love you anyway, even though you're still spiteful. I love you anyway, because that keeps me connected to my higher power, and so I don't need to find a way to fix not being connected by whatever it is. Continuing with each one of us has our own little way of dealing with loneliness or out to, there I go, whatever it is. Stay up all night watching TV. Just avoid the feelings. So I just throw that out, and now we're on to, this is the lecture for this morning. And in order to make a point this morning, I'm going to extend a very special spiritual greeting to some of my friends. And then we're going to try to figure out why in God's name I would ever extend that warm spiritual greeting. So I'll start out with Bob Bazant. Bob, I wish you weren't here. Scott Redman, you came all the way from Los Angeles, and I'll tell you, I wish you weren't here. And Gene, you came driving up here, and I wish you weren't here. And for the rest of you, I wish I wasn't here. There, how's that for getting the morning off to a good start? What is that all about? Okay, let's everyone imagine this room and this setting, and you're not here. So you really got to use your imagination, okay? All the other people are here, and you're looking around, and you're taking it all in by your imagination. You're just imagining that you're here. You're just taking it all in by imagining that you're here. So the only thing that would be here is your imagination, okay? I made a list of what wouldn't be here if you weren't here. Okay? This is what wouldn't be here. Your story wouldn't be here. Your judgments, your fears, your opinions, your plans, your past, your secrets, your politics, your hobbies, your habits, your idiosyncrasies, your preferences, your style, your mannerisms, your beliefs, your activism, your liberalism, your conservatism, your fatherhood, your debating, your awards, your commendations, your titles, your memberships, your methods, your desires, your pain, your burdens, your injustices, your fantasies, your routines, your possessions, your likes, your dislikes, your views, your taste, your sexuality, your nostalgia, your eating, your driving, your pride, your alcoholism, your resentments, your future, your security, your friends, your enemies, your courage, your mistakes, your prayers, your influence, your traditions, and we could go on and on. What if none of that was here? What does it say about that in the literature? I would be like the hole in the donut. I would be a non-entity. Wouldn't it be nice to not be here? Wouldn't it be great, Scott, if you really weren't here? Wouldn't it be great if I was? Could I be here without me being here? How freeing would that be? Just none of that list, which is only partial. It could go on for pages. What if that all that list of 2 pages of you wasn't here, and you were here minus that? To me, that would be spectacular. Nobody would be here in the traditional sense, and we could just be so happy as we looked at our friend. I'm so glad you're not here. Hey, well, boy, gee, Chuck, I'm so glad you're not here. And we'd be telling them the greatest gift they could be given, which is to be here without you. Well, how are we going to get rid of you? It's clear that we have to form a conspiracy without you finding out to get rid of you. Like, you know, a murder, an assassination of some sort. You got to go. You know what I mean? When they're going to overthrow the king, it's clear you got to go. You are ruining the country that you live in, which is you. We got to overthrow the king of your own life. And that's what I think the prayer of St. Francis is really all about. And I made some notes. So we're talking about dying in the sense that I just talked about it. Now that word in this country starts an anxiety reaction. Gene and I were talking about it before the meeting. It just starts an anxiety. I don't want to talk about that. I do not want to talk about it. Guess what part of me doesn't want to talk about it?
Ego.
My heart? No, my ego. Because it can see through that plot. Hey, if they figure this one out, I'm done. I'm done. So I'm going to cause great anxiety. I'm going to cause people to faint. What happened?
I'm talking about dying and...
The boogeyman. When I first got sober, I couldn't visit my sponsor in the hospital because the hospital reminded me that you might get sick and then you might die. And it was too terrifying to even go see him in the hospital because that's, I don't know what it was. Later on, I realized it was a fear of never having lived. That was what I was really afraid of, that the truth was going to come out, that I didn't know a clue about what life was, and I was going to leave here clueless, and that was very panicky. So here's a question. When a caterpillar turns into a butterfly, Does the caterpillar really die? I'm sure from one point of view, the caterpillar goes, well, this is it. I'm a goner. You know what I'm saying? I'm a goner. And then what happens? He awakens to something he never dreamed of and flies off, weightless, just... and is seen by mankind as one of the most beautiful things to watch. You notice how we're all fascinated with a butterfly? When they come by, you can't help. And I think it's the fascination with transformation. There's part of us that knows, that's you, pal. That's who you really are. You're not this thing crawling along here. It's really, I would say, no, it doesn't. It is transformed. It is literally transformed. And I often wonder, you know, if my mind is weird, but I'm finding out there's a lot of you guys with the weird minds just like it. What happens when a butterfly lands next to a caterpillar? Is there one of them going, man, I seem to remember that. But I'm not sure. Doesn't look possible. On the other hand, I wish I was like that guy, just flying along. And nah, couldn't be. No way. No way could something like that happen to me. You know where I feel that? When I see the Dalai Lama. Martin Luther King. When Martin Luther King spoke, I cried. You know why I cried? As a white guy. I heard him say that he was concerned as much for my unhappiness as he was for the black guy's unhappiness. He knew the pain that I was in for having these terrible ideas and hatred and being locked in to a stupid past. And he knew that this would free black and white. I knew he was just a liberated human being. It didn't matter the color, as opposed to, we're going to divide and we... Now I was listening to an enlightened being who made my heart cry. So did Nelson Mandela. There's a big difference between an enlightenment and a cause. And you respond to the enlightenment. That's what I heard. It made me just, God, I just felt so good. And then I watched, just stand there and watch the dogs and the fire hoses. And it was just, God will take care of this. This is a non-resistance. All of the stuff that been taught spiritually throughout the ages, and there it was right in front of our eyes. Just fantastic. But getting back to the Dalai Lama, so I sit, and there's the butterfly, as far as I'm concerned, and there's the caterpillar. And part of me is going, you know, that could happen to you. And guess what my ego goes, no, not you. You don't think there's 55 Dalai Lamas in here? You got to look again. You don't think that could happen? I think it can. If you believe it, and if you seek it, it's there. Now that's encouraging, isn't it? Wouldn't it be great to just fly? I'm going to read the poem High Flight later on. Bill, I know you've heard it. About leaving the surly bonds of earth and reaching out and touching the face of God. It used to play on the TV stations. So that's what I see in the prayer. These are some notes I've wrote about ego. Ego believes that life can't take care of itself. How do you like that? Life take care of itself without me managing in some way? You mean life would just unfold the way it's supposed to? That isn't going to happen. The other one was the ego isn't wrong. It's just unconscious. It's not awakened. The feeling that I don't have enough. These are just some of the parameters of looking at it. The feeling that I don't have enough means that I am not enough. And that creates a state of wanting. And this is the most interesting part of this wanting. The ego wants to want more than it wants to have. That's where it exists, is in the dissatisfaction with the now. So if I want a new Cadillac and get it, then I have to want something else. Because wanting is what separates us. So that's why we were saying, as we go around the St. Francis and as we go around in this retreat, is to try and sit and not want anything to be different than it is. So like in the silent meal tonight, stand in line and not want that you could talk. And not want anything other than just the way it is. Which is a backwards way of saying acceptance. But this wanting is a way of staying out of the now. The ego says, yes, I know the now is where you're supposed to be. And I would go into the now if we just change this. It's not quite acceptable yet. And I want a couple more things to be different. Then I'll be glad to settle into the now, which is where the ego can't exist. So it's been called a dysfunctional relationship with the now. It has to see that there's something wrong with the now, so I can't be in it. So all the time, no matter what is going on, something inside of me wants it to be different. You know what I mean? Like right now, it seemed to have gotten warmer in here, and part of me wants the air on for a second. In other words, right away there's something that occurred that my ego took advantage of so that I can't just totally be present. It's like, I'm totally present, but I'd be more present if it was cooler. That's not being present. You follow what I'm saying? I'm always finding something about the now that needs to be adjusted before I'm going to settle in for the night. You follow what I'm saying? Well, I've got to get the covers this way. No, what? One last thing. One more smoke. Okay, I'm turning in for the night. What? One more. Drive ourselves crazy. Why don't you just go to sleep? So that's that dissatisfaction with the now. Then another thought that I either read or came to me is that each time we awaken further, it's not, let me see how I wrote it. It's not that the questions that I had before don't exist. It's just I'm not interested in it anymore. Now let me give you an example, and I'm sure all of you will relate to this. When I found out I was an alcoholic, I was obsessed with why I became an alcoholic. Did anybody else? The Catholic Church. It must have been the challenge. When the obsession was lifted, I just was like, oh, yeah. I could care less why I became an somebody came up and said, you know, the psychiatrist, who cares? I'm not interested anymore. I have no interest in all the questions I used to have. So they weren't answered. They just became irrelevant. What a difference, right? So all this stuff that we're trying to know, when it is revealed, we're going, what do I want to know all that crap for? That has nothing to do with it. Which is the need to know. The need to know is, we had that in the military. We'd have a message. You remember that, Bill? And then there was only certain people that could know. And we'd remember, you sort of remember that, Bill. Boom! Need to know. Only know. And eyes only. Your eyes only. Or whatever the heck was all that stuff. And there was the... But from an ego's point of view, I'm on every list there is. Need to know. Because my problem is I don't know enough. And I need to know this. And if I knew that, and if I knew, no. And then we get to, what about need to know about why you're now, oh, I don't need to know that anymore. I don't need to know. What if we could remove all of the need to know, anything? Would that create a tremendous peace of mind? We would be in the state that they refer to as not knowing. Well, I just don't know. That's where I am. Well, don't you want to know? No, I just like not knowing. Not a bad goal, is it? Now the ego goes, whoa. God, we got to know the mystery of life. We got to understand the universe. We got to understand that. That's how you'll understand it, is by not knowing. And then you can realize that you are the universe. You are. You can't go beyond what we are. It's the awareness of our being that is the answer to everything. So the mystery of life is the mystery of you. As soon as you see yourself as it is revealed, that's it. Can't go beyond it. So there's nothing to learn. There is a question of how can I place myself in the proper direction, the proper attitude, whatever you want to call it, so that more is revealed. When it gets revealed, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, who knows? But when it does, there's no doubt that it is revealed. So if we looked at awakening or dying, they're both the same thing, like a hologram. I never saw one until I was at my son's home in Baltimore about 15, 20 years ago, and he had one on the wall, and the grandchildren saw it in 3 minutes. And then they're all suddenly, oh, it's just look, but don't look. It's kind of up in the left-hand corner, you know. So I'm out there, the grandfather. I don't want to say I haven't seen it, but I haven't. And everyone else has. So during the meal, I'm constantly going to the bathroom so I can go down this hall where the picture is hanging, and I'm, you know, and I... And then they'd be yelling, you know, my son, Dad, what are you doing? Oh, right there. You know, like I never saw it. I went home without ever seeing it. Never saw it. So if you wanted to coach me in seeing that, Sandy, Jesus, it's simple. Here's a book on how to see holograms. Well, the book would be one page, one sentence. I don't care how big an expert you are. The book would be one page, one sentence. Stand there till you freaking see it. Anybody disagree with that? You have to stand there and look at it until it appears. You can read all the books in the world. You can do anything you want. But until that sucker, boom, for you... It isn't there yet. Well, I think seeking is like that. I'm just going to keep looking until it appears. I'm going to keep looking until it appears. And so we're in the process of doing that. And as I said earlier at the at dinner, during the silence, around the 14 lines of the prayer of St. Francis, just accept everything just the way it is. Try to eliminate any wanting that it be different. And make that a focus. It is a way of opening the door to awareness. That is looking at the hologram until it reveals itself to you. That is a placing ourselves in a state. That's a way of getting to the hologram. In other words, you can't be at the hologram and not and wanting to be somewhere else. And being there, but only for 2 minutes. Okay, I'll look for 2 minutes. Then I got, what do I have? Something more important than this stupid hologram. Well, if it's more important, then that's what's going to appear. That's what you're really seeking, is what you have to go in 2 minutes to. Which is why we don't have any cell phones. There's nothing more important than being in this room. And the more we realize that, the more we enjoy being here, the more we're totally present. So as we are going from place to place, have no wanting that we're somewhere else or that anything about it is any different. And somehow the deal got arranged this way. You know, and oft times you speculate, why was it set up this way? Why is it set up? Why is it that this is the way it is? That you arrive on planet Earth, you go taken off on a freaking detour by a jokester called your ego, and then you got to spend the rest of your damn life trying to undo all the jokes that played on you just to get back to where you started, me, Tarzan. Who the hell would have thought up something like that? Who knows? But I made up a story. This story could be so far off the mark as to be ridiculous. But the story is about Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy, which is why you've got the handout there about Edgar Bergen. And I'm going to play some tapes from the radio shows, just little excerpts, and I hope they come out clear enough to hear them. And I just want to make the... Now, when I grew up, that was... God, boy, when Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy came on the radio, my uncle, before he went away to World War II, and he'd kid me that he brought me a Charlie McCarthy thing, and I'd be moving the mouth while I'm listening to the radio, and all of this stuff. So, now, I want you to imagine that you are a radio producer, and I come in, and I want to get on your program, and you say, what do you do? I said, I'm a magician. I mean, I got stuff you wouldn't believe. I got illusions and tricks that when people see it, they just faint. It's so good. He said, this is a radio program. People can't see. Oh, yeah. So he's out. Next guy comes in. What do? I'm a ventriloquist. I have a dummy sitting on my lap, and I throw my voice into the dummy. It blows people's minds. Good thing for a radio show? How did he ever get on there? How did a freaking ventriloquist get on and become the most popular radio thing? All of the big stars appeared. I mean, you're going to hear W.C. Fields. He made several appearances and became the arch nemesis of Charlie. And the two of them just went at it. And Jimmy Stewart, you're going to hear with Mortimer Snerd, Marilyn Monroe. I mean, it just write down all of the big movie stars came on and are talking, and I'm sitting at home with the radio, I'm just going nuts. This is more damn fun. Then came television. And they said, boy, we're going to move this right into television. And the funny thing was, Bergen wasn't that good a ventriloquist. And you could see his mouth moving like, blah, 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 while Charlie's talking. And nobody cared. They already loved the two of them so much, we didn't care if he was mouthing the words. It was just a small and you just pretended you didn't see it because they were so wonderful. So we're going to take about 11 minutes or so and play this. So I hope it picks up.
Lee, I'm going to turn this off first.
The Montagues and the Capulets, the Hatfields and the Coys, but this one tops them all.
I think I know the adversaries, Charlie and the great W.C. Fields.
How we battled.
Yes.
Oh, and how we loved every minute of it.
That's right.
And so did the audience. That feud was responsible for the biggest listening audience any radio show ever had. Yeah. Whenever Charlie and W.C. Fields met, sparks flew.
Ah, hello, Edgar.
If it isn't W.C., the original half-man, half-nose,
Well, Charlie McCarthy, the woodpecker's pin-up boy.
Well, as long as you're here, Bill, you can talk to me while Charlie's getting his hair cut.
You know, Edgar, it's touching to see your affection for the little nipper. It strikes a tender chord in my heart.
Oh, thank you, Bill. You know, I thought you didn't like children.
Oh, not at all, Edgar. I love children. I can remember when, with my own little unsteady legs, I toddled from room to room.
When was that, last night?
Quiet, Wormwood, or I'll whittle you down to a coat hanger.
Yeah.
Tell me, Charles, is it true your father was a gate-legged table?
If it is, your father was under it, or...
Why, you stunted spruce. I'll throw a Japanese beetle on you.
Why, you barfly, you. I'll stick a wick in your mouth and use you for an alcohol lamp.
I think one of my favorite shows was the time Marilyn Monroe was a guest.
Oh, boy.
Because in this skit is somebody who's in the AA history books, and some of you guys might not know about this, Gabriel Heater. You'll see that he's so sad that Marilyn Monroe is getting married, and so he always started his radio show with, ah, there's good news tonight. And on this one he starts, there's bad news tonight, and Marilyn Monroe isn't available anymore. But this is the, there was an Irishman that was working with Bill Wilson who knew Gabriel Heater and could get an interview on his radio show where they had a little segment of human interest. His name was Ryan. And Bill was very excited because he's trying to get publicity for the Big Book. And so he said, are you sure you can get on and you'll mention the book? He was trying to sell the book. I mean, money was the problem. And he said, yes, yes. And this is the guy, his sobriety was real shaky. So they took Ryan, they put him in the New York Athletic Club for the 10 days between now and the time he was on the Gabriel Heater show. And they had an AA guard night and day to make sure that he didn't. So I just wanted to give you that.
I was really living there for a while.
That was quite a romance Charlie and Marilyn Monroe had. In fact, they were on the verge of getting married.
Yeah.
You know, Charlie, in a little while you will be married to Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah.
You know, Charlie, there comes a time in everyone's life when he must learn about certain things.
Yeah. Well, what do you want to know, Bergen?
What I'm trying to tell you, Charlie, is that what I'm trying to explain to you, I don't know what you're trying to...
Charlie!
Oh, Marilyn Monroe!
Right here! Oh,
and you look beautiful.
I'm wearing my wedding dress.
Yeah.
Something borrowed.
Yeah, you didn't borrow enough.
You'll be so happy. Mm-hmm. I can see it now.
Yeah?
You and I by the fireplace and the kettle whistling.
Oh, who can blame it?
Charlie.
Marilyn, my dear, we were made for each other.
Kiss me, Charlie. Just to make sure.
Yes, gladly, all right. Song. I think they've enlarged the orchestra.
Well, you can't go through with this marriage. The whole country's in revolt, old boy.
Yes.
Here, look, I brought my portable radio so you could hear what's happening.
And now, here is Gabriel Heater.
Ah, there's bad news tonight. Marilyn Monroe is marrying Charlie McCarthy. Somewhere in an army camp, a soldier is tearing up his calendar. Somewhere in New York, a man is crying. That's me. Now for a brief message from our sponsor.
Don't do it, Marilyn.
Evans, they turn on another station.
I'll try this one.
Hello, hello, hello. This is Arthur Godfrey, sponsored by practically everyone. Marilyn Monroe is marrying Charlie McCarthy. By golly, there'll be no commercials today. Only last night I was looking at a picture of Marilyn Monroe and smoking, and I didn't even have a cigarette. Now she's getting married, oh dear. Well, this is for you, Marilyn. I went to your wedding, though I was dreading the thought of losing you. Your mother was crying, your father was crying.
His strings are getting soggy. Turn him off.
I'll try this station, yeah. Sheriff.
Stand by for a shortwave broadcast. Direct from England, we bring you the Honorable Winston Churchill.
This is America's darkest hour. The entire British Empire extends its sympathy. If Charles McCarthy insists upon going through with his marriage to Marilyn Monroe, I have only one thing to say. Never has anyone so little taken so much from so many.
You know, I sure got laughs in those days, didn't I?
Yeah, Charlie sure did. But after a while, you had a competitor for the laugh. Edgar created Mortimer Snert.
Yeah.
One of Mortimer's classics was the time he and Jimmy Stewart tangled with you, Edgar, in a panel discussion on agriculture.
Tonight's discussion will concern itself with the various phases of farm problems, and our guests are two of the most prominent farmers in the country. I would like to introduce them to you right now. First, your name, please, sir.
Well, it always has been. Oh, no, I... Dear Well, what was the query? The query.
Your name is Mortimer Snurt.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And now for our other expert on this farm panel, your name, please.
Well, my name is, I know as well as I know my own name. What was the query?
Yes, your name, sir.
Oh, yeah, Zeke Stewart.
Yes, I see. Thank you. Gentlemen, greetings and salutations.
Well, thank you. I don't mind if I do. Yeah.
I'll go along with that.
Mind if I go with you?
No.
Gentlemen, please. This is a forum. Now, what is your opinion on agriculture?
Well, it's my opinion that no farm should be without it.
I'll go along with that.
First, wait for me, huh?
No. We must have some helpful information. Now, well, Mr. Snurd, what is your idea on increasing milk production?
I'm glad you asked me, yeah. First, increasing milk production.
Yeah.
First, you got to get a cow. You got to do that. You'll go along with me on that, won't you, Zeke?
Yeah. Should be a female cow.
Yeah. Now, this morning I milked 2 gallons of milk in 10 minutes.
I see. Well, you must have been in great form.
Yeah, sir, I was really hitting on all four.
Perhaps I'll do better if I explain parity. Parity is equality in purchasing power between different kinds of money at a given ratio.
No!
Zeke's opinion, yes.
Look, gentlemen, in other words, if a bushel of corn costs $2 under present conditions, do you think...
Well, I'll tell you, it's like this.
I haven't asked the question yet.
Well, I ain't a fellow that waits until the last minute. All
right. No, now, time to waste them, that's for dang sure. I like you, Mort. You're nobody's fool.
Well, nobody's in particular, anyway. Well, that's for dang sure.
We ought to get along fine. We understand each other.
Who do?
You and me.
Oh, them, yeah.
That's who I was talking about.
Gentlemen, if
you
the bushel of corn...
Okay, I'm going to stop it there for time purposes.
And that brought back just a lot of memories to hear that. But the story is this. Bergen died in 1978. And when he went to heaven, God was really pleased with him. And he said, "You made people happy all over the world." That is just the most wonderful thing. And I want to do something for you. And any wish you want, you can have. And he said, "You know what I'd like?" He said, "I would like Charlie McCarthy to know how much I love him. That's what I would like." And God said, "That's a tough one. But I think I figured it out. There's only one way that can happen." And suddenly, somewhere in another universe, there was a planet that came to be known as Bergan. And it wasn't too dissimilar from ours. And in the Midwest, there was a couple that was getting ready to get married. Or they'd been married, they were getting ready to have a baby. And they were named Tim and Janet McCarthy. And they were all excited. They were pretty sure it was going to be a boy. And they were going to name him after their grandfather, Alex. But when the baby was born, something inside of both of them made them name it Charlie. They just were overpowered with naming it Charlie. And from the time Charlie was born, you couldn't stop him from talking. Mama, 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 mama. He just would talk and talk and talk. And he was a pretty good kid, like all other kids. Took to the world, went out, became semi-successful, tried to figure out life, tried to figure out why he seemed to remember that it was different. But he couldn't. He just went on about the frustration of writing his own play and living in it. And like so many others, he got to the end of the line in a sense of being lost and lonely and drank and drugged and got in trouble and got arrested and got pushed down to where a lot of us have been until he just screamed out, "Please help me." And he remembers this to this day, the screaming out just in agony, "Please help me, please help me." And he heard a voice and it said, "Charlie, wake up. Wake up. You have a dream, Charlie. Wake up." And Charlie started looking and he went, "Bergen? Yeah, it's me. Charlie, wake up. Bergen, where have I been?" "Well, you've been asleep, Charlie. What, did you have a bad dream?" "Yeah. God, I can't believe it. I can't believe I don't remember this. I can't believe that I don't remember sitting on your knees for all of my life. I can't believe it. I really missed you. It's terrible being out there without you. It's the worst dream I ever had." And he looked at him and he said, "Bergen, are you the light that we're all talking about?" And he said, "Yeah." And he said, "I'm supposed to shine through your eyes. I'm supposed to shine through your eyes. Just that's how we are as a team. And I'm supposed to speak through your mouth. My words are supposed to come out of you. You don't have to make up anything. You just sit here and enjoy our love." And Charlie said, "I never really understood this till I had that dream. I never understood this is the deal. I never could see what was going on." And Bergen said, "You know, Mortimer and I have missed you a lot." And Charlie said, "That Mortimer, we haven't got anything in common. He's stupid, I'm smart. He's a hillbilly, I'm sophisticated. It's the damnedest thing how much I love him. Why would I love him, Bergen? We got nothing in common." And he said, "Well, I made him too." And Charlie understood that they both had the same creator, and so they were exactly the same. But he had to get a line in, and he said, "You know, Bergen, I can still see your lips moving." And Bergen said, "Charlie, there's no problem at all having my voice go to you and you speaking. It's just that I'm praying for you at the same time." And so there's a picture of why it has to be this way from a story point of view. It's really the only way we could ever understand love is to not have it. And so as we get to the end of the lecture and I go back to the prayer of St. Francis, and I look at this and it says that where there is hatred, I may bring love. What's another way of looking at that? How am I going to bring love? Where do I get it? And then what I see is, I am love. My ego created hatred. Then I'm going to bring the spirit of forgiveness. I am the spirit of forgiveness. My ego created wrong. I am harmony. I don't have to look for it. That's who I am. My ego created discord. I am the truth. I don't have to look for it. That's who I am. My ego created error. I am faith. My ego created doubt. I made it up. I made up doubt. Makes a great story. We got guys, I'm in doubt, don't know where I am. I may bring hope where there's despair. I don't have to go get it. I am hope. You're hope. That's who you are. That's your nature. Your ego made up despair. You're the light. Your ego made up the shadows and covered it up. It's there. I am the source of joy. I made up sadness. Made it up out of whole cloth. Just watch this. I created a sad line and then it caused people to react to it. And presto, sadness. But that isn't real. The real thing is I'm joy. So when we come down to dying that one awakens to eternal life, it is the happiest moment that we could have, is to see through all of these self-created parts and have revealed our true nature. And so maybe this weekend we'll get the chance to look at that prayer and realize, just to tie it in, we're right at the end of the time, when, in case I forget, when we do the silent 3 hours or whatever it is, I'm going to suggest, and I want to mention it now because it ties in with the lecture, that at some point during the silence, doesn't matter where, during the meal, back here, over there, you take about a half hour in your mind, and start loving anything. You know, love your hand, love your arm. Look around the room. Love, 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 love. Just love the back of everybody's head in the room. Love that lamp, love the fan, love those things. Every tree. I love that tree, that tree, that tree, that tree, that tree, that tree. And then when you run out of stuff you can see, imagine stuff like all of China. I'm going to love every guy in China. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, I'm going to love them, love them, love them, love them. When you get through China, go through Africa. And when you get through the planet Earth, go through the universe. All the stars up there, 1,000,000,000 of stars. I'm going to love that one, I'm going to love that one, I'm going to love that one. See if in 30 minutes you can run out of love. I bet you can't. That's my bet. If somebody does, come on up and tell me. I'm going to put money on it. You won't come close. You're going to find that you tapped into more than you thought existed. Why? Because you're a channel. You really are part of the source. That's pretty good news, isn't it? We are the source. Holy cow. Let's take a break. Go to lunch. Or whatever's coming up. Thank you.